following Conscious Consumer Network recording of a live broadcast is available to purchase in high definition at ethymarket.com. Support free and independent media by becoming a CCN pledger. For 10 euros a month, you can have unlimited access to CCN high definition downloads at ethymarket.com. Ethymarket, the ethical marketplace for conscious consumers.
Welcome to Awaken and Power TV. I'm your host, Ethan Fox. Today I'm joined by Eric Layden, the documentary filmmaker behind the film Trace Amounts, that goes into the presence of mercury and thimerosal in vaccines and its effects on a variety of illnesses, in particular autism. And we also discuss some of the treatments for autism that have been successful, and as well as how you can remove the presence of mercury from other sources, such as mercury amalgam fillings and other environmental sources as well. So without any further delay, here is Eric Layden. Hello, Eric. Welcome to Awaken Empowered TV. It's a pleasure to have you on my show and to speak with you for the next couple of hours about your documentary film, Trace Amounts, and the whole vaccine conversation and some other related things, autism and so on, that were covered pretty heavily in your film. So welcome to the show, and thank you for joining me today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So I'd like to start by talking a little about your background, where you come from in terms of, I know in the film you talked a little about how you came to produce the film, but I'd like you to share some of that too. But even before that, what was your life like before all this began, and did you ever have an inclination toward activism or even documentary filmmaking prior to that?
Yeah, it was a lot different, let's put it that way. I grew up in Wyoming and Montana, and then went to Oregon State University, where I majored in engineering, and I graduated in 99. And kind of by coincidence, I built pharmaceutical manufacturing suites. So I worked for, I built for Baxter Pharmaceutical for probably 4 years, Amgen Pharmaceutical for a few years, and then really was focused and driven on my career and moving down the direction of starting a family, and I bought a house, and I was kind of going towards the American dream, and then everything kind of changed on the turn of a dime, when I got a tetanus shot when I was 29, when I was building my fence in my backyard, and that kind of changed the whole direction and steered my life in a totally different direction. Somebody would have told me, 10 years from now, you will have made a film and travel the country, trying to get this message out, I would be like, you're crazy. But that's what's happened. And I don't want to say unfortunately, because I think with every bad thing, good things can come. And maybe with the bad I went through, we try to make some positives out there to try to somewhat get the message out there to protect other people from getting these types of exposures and getting sick like I did. So it's definitely been an interesting change in life path.
Did it seem a little strange to you at first, having been in the pharmaceutical industry and being part of that whole conversation and then going in a completely different direction and really not exactly, I don't want to say working against the pharmaceutical industry, but in many ways your message is counter to what they're trying to do?
Yeah, the interesting thing is I've put in, my film really focuses on thimerosal, which is the mercury-based preservative, and how they use that in the production and in the manufacturing and production and fill and distribution of vaccines. And I built a lot of pharmaceutical manufacturing suites where they actually manufacture the drugs all the way through the fill line process and filling it. And because there's many different options as far as preservatives and what you do with the drug at the end of the fill line. Like one of the pharmaceutical companies I built for at the end of the fill line, they would run the product through an LN2 bath that flash freezes it, and then run it through a lyophilizer that freeze dries it. Now you've got it in powder form, and you have all the shelf life in the world, and then when you're ready to inject it, you add water for injection, put it back in a liquid form, and you inject it. So I have a lot of perspective as far as how clean these manufacturing facilities need to be as well, like during the manufacturing process, and have an ultra-sterile environment instead of just trying to be lazy and dump a bunch of thimerosal in there so bacteria can't grow. You actually create an environment where bacteria can't grow. And these vaccines are basically just short, stepping and saving money in manufacturing in dirty environments and wanting to do multi-dose vials where they can keep breaking the bottle with a needle that can introduce bacteria, when there's all sorts of different methods where you wouldn't have to use mercury in any way or fashion in the production and in the manufacturing of these vaccines. So I had a totally different perspective as far as, because of my experience building pharmaceutical manufacturing suites, that there are always alternates and you do not need mercury in any way for these vaccines to be effective. And that, if we are right in this theory that vaccines are playing a major role in this, not only autism, but other neurodevelopmental disorders, that's the biggest tragedy of all, is it never needed to be in there to begin with.
I think most people should know by now what mercury is and are pretty familiar with the dangers of it to some extent. Obviously, even in the whole dental industry, it's people don't realize the dangers of it. But I think a lot of people still don't even know what thimerosal is and what the hazards are of thimerosal, and many believe that it's really contains no mercury at all. So can you explain a little about what is thimerosal exactly?
Yeah, thimerosal. So basically, if you just took mercury and put it in a vat, let's say a solution, it wouldn't disperse throughout the solution, kind of just drop down to the bottom and sink, or depending on the molecular weight of the other solution, it's just going to kind of just go in there and sit. So what they ended up doing was mixing it with thiosalicylate, which allows it to kind of disperse throughout the entire solution. And it was invented clear back in the late 1920s, and it was originally invented to be, it was pre-antibiotics. So they were kind of testing it from the standpoint of, oh, maybe we can inject this into people and it'll kill, bacteria and stuff that antibiotics are now used for. And when that failed miserably, they kind of scrambled around. They're like, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? We spent all this money on testing and we've got this product, and a lot of money was put forth. And at the last minute, they kind of said, oh, well, let's try it as a preservative. And, it wasn't even designed to be what it's used for. It's been used for decades without any proper safety testing. It's pre-FDA, or when FDA had authority over it, let's say. And they did do one independent third-party study on 22 terminally ill meningitis patients, and all of the patients died. And there's a lot of speculation. Did they die of the meningitis, or did they die of the thimerosal exposures they were getting? And there was no autopsies done, so we don't know one way or the other. But the fact is, they all ended up dying. And to this day, that's the only safety test ever done on thimerosal. This was back in 29, around 30. And then it was introduced into childhood vaccines as a preservative in 31. And it's been there ever since. And a lot of people think that thimerosal, ethyl mercury, is the safe form of mercury. And that's kind of what the CDC and Big Pharma loves to say. And they've been saying it for 10 years. But the science has matured and developed over the last 10 years. And thimerosal, ethyl mercury, that is ultimately what thimerosal is, 50% ethyl mercury, is much more dangerous than methyl that you see in fish. They say the opposite. Their exact words are actually, ethyl mercury is the safe form of mercury, and it's not neurotoxic like methyl mercury. And the studies have been done. We've got just bare studies on thimerosal versus methyl, and that find thimerosal is 50 times more toxic than methyl mercury. And at less exposures, it's far more than 50 times more toxic. And not only that, it shows that ethyl, once in the brain, they both go readily into the across the blood-brain barrier into the brain. But ethyl deethylates into the inorganic form much faster than methyl demethylates. And the inorganic form that it converts to is the form that cannot cross back out through that blood-brain barrier. So it locks in. Ethyl is the form that accumulates in the brain. So, it is far more dangerous than methyl. Yet they've, for years and years and years, have been saying it's a safe form. And we really need to overturn that message, because the science is there now to show how incredibly dangerous this is. And we cannot be injecting this into people. And to this day, 51 million flu shots, just this flu season alone, contain the full 25 micrograms of mercury, given to babies, pregnant women, and everyone else, adults and old people, older people. And the two fallacies out there are mercury's been removed, the autism rates keep going up, and that ethyl isn't dangerous like methyl. I already talked about ethyl versus methyl, but the fact that mercury, first of all, it hasn't been removed like they claim, it's worse than ever because now we're giving it to a developing fetus who has no ability to excrete it, or a 10-pound baby has some ability to excrete it. They're producing bile, they're urinating, growing hair, sweating. They have some ability to excrete it. Now you're hitting the most susceptible of them all, and that's developing fetuses. However, the latest autism rate of today, which is 168, That's based on children born in 2002. That's how far behind the times they are with their autism rates. These are the highest exposed group yet, because they not only got the fully loaded backstock of thimerosal containing vaccines, they started getting flu shots in 2004. So this is the highest exposed group yet. We're not even out of the range where some of the mercury was removed from these vaccines. So we don't know what happened after they removed some of the mercury from childhood vaccines and then added it to pregnant women. So it's just a complete mess. There's so much misinformation out there. And what we're trying to do with the film and our promotional tour and going around and talking to audiences is to really present the accurate science and the accurate information, because it goes far beyond that, as you saw in the film with the documents, all the emails, all the closed door meeting transcripts. This is going to be an insane problem to them when this information gets out to the public.
Now, the meningitis experiment, all of the participants died within the same day they were administered mercury, right? So it seems, wasn't that the case?
Some of them did, yeah. Some of them died the same day. There was a few other, you know, of the 22 patients, I'd have to relook the study. Some died the same day. Some died a little bit after. I think maybe one lasted a month or two. I can't remember the exact stats, but, you know, and then they just say, they use that study to say it's safe, but there was no autopsies done. More than likely, they died of the thimerosal. We don't know one way or the other, and to in any way use that. In fact, I looked a few years ago on the FDA's website to see what safety studies they referenced for thimerosal, and this was the study they referenced, one where they gave it to 22 patients. And keep in mind, the exposure levels they were given to these 22 patients were at levels that they've already tested on animals, on rabbits, and it killed them all. So they were giving these same exposure levels, you know, weight adjusted and all that, you know, adjusted for the size, to humans after they'd already killed animals in laboratory. I mean, that is a pretty dangerous safety study to do when they already saw killed animals at those exposure levels, you know, weight, quantity per kilogram body weight or whatever it happened to be, whatever the measurements were. But so it was a dangerous study to begin with. All the patients died, and then they used that safety study all the way till now to claim that thimerosal is safe. It's a tragedy.
Can you share the in your film, you give an example that I think is really a good illustration of what is a safe level of mercury according to CDC and what is actually in the vaccines. The swimming pool example, can you share those numbers a little bit?
Yeah, well, the swimming pool example, you know, the parts from, I think that's probably not as good of a reference as the EPA's guideline. You know, the EPA's guideline, let's put it this way. There were four different guidelines for mercury exposure. There was the Environmental Protection Agencies, they had one guideline for mercury exposure. There was the FDA, Food and Drug Administration, had another guideline. There was the CDC, who used the ATSDR guideline. And there was the World Health Organization guideline. And the interesting thing is the amount of mercury these children were getting in their vaccines in the 90s, early 2000s, primarily, exceeded all of those guidelines combined. I mean, it was far beyond. You get one of these shots, you'd have to weigh 551 pounds. And all through the 90s and early 2000s, two-month-olds were getting the equivalent of 2.5 of these shots. They'd have to weigh almost 1,400 pounds to get their two-month-old baby shots per the CDC schedule. I mean, this is astronomically, these exposures, and they never did the math. You know, for if we want to walk through the history, you know, thimerosal was introduced in 1931. For the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and through the 80s, children would receive four DTP shots, diphtheria, tetanus, and pertussis, so 25 micrograms of mercury each, totaling 100 micrograms of mercury. And keep in mind, those exact same decades, autism was 1 in 10,000. It was asleep at the wheel. And also keep in mind, of the very first 11 children ever diagnosed with autism, the oldest, meaning the first one born, was born in 1931, the exact year thimerosal was introduced into these vaccines. So now you kind of follow the history through. 1 in 10, total cumulative exposure, 100 micrograms for all these kids. And the autism rate remained at 1 in 10,000 all the way through the 80s. And then all the published data shows that right around 89, the autism rate started to increase. Well, what happened was between 89 and 92, they added four HIB shots with 25 micrograms each. So they just doubled the exposures. So it went from 100 microgram cumulative to 200 micrograms cumulative. Then they also added three hepatitis B vaccines, 12.5 micrograms each. So between 89 and 92, cumulative exposures went from 100 micrograms to 237.5 micrograms just in a few years. And they never did the math until 1998. So by 1998, Congress basically forced the FDA to do the math, how much mercury these kids were getting in products, and vaccines was one of them. And when they did the math, you saw some of the emails in the film, it startled them. They were definitely scared, trying to compare that, you know, run the math compared to the guidelines, and they freaked. I mean, they even mentioned, you know, they're going to be seen to have been asleep at the wheel, or asleep at the switch, I think is what they said. And they really started to panic. And then when they did that initial study, where they looked in the vaccine safety data link, where they have all these medical records of, you know, vaccine medical records for all these children, CDC did that initial study and found an astronomical relative risk. I mean, a relative risk that is above smoking and lung cancer, because smoking and lung cancer, smoke a pack a day for 20 years, you have a relative risk of 10, meaning you have 10 times the chance of developing lung cancer than somebody who doesn't smoke. Well, that's incredibly high. That's like as high as it gets almost. Well, they found with their first pass of thimerosal and autism, a relative risk of 7.62, ran it again the next month and found it 11.35 relative risk. They figured out the cause of autism. This is in November and December of 1999. And that's when the American Academy of Pediatrics and the United States Public Health Service issued a joint statement in July of that year saying, you know, we need to remove thimerosal from childhood vaccines as soon as possible. And that didn't happen. Everyone thinks, and you hear it all over the news, the next autism rate's going to come out, and they're going to say the rates keep going up, and mercury was removed so long ago. That's just the final nail in the coffin once again. I've been hearing this for years, but these people are so misled by the CDC, they don't even understand. You have to look at when they were born and when they were getting their vaccines. You know, I've been hearing this since the birth cohort that was born in the mid-90s, claiming that mercury was removed and the autism rates keep going up, and the children are in the mid-90s. So what ended up happening was, they didn't recall it. They continued to manufacture these vaccines with thimerosal loaded and given to children through 2001. And backstock of those vaccines lasted at least through 2003. So once that mercury was pretty clear, even though keep in mind for a long time, they continued to contain up to, you know, 1 microgram in those shots instead in lieu of 25 micrograms. But as soon as all that mercury was out of those childhood vaccines, and we were probably resolving a big portion of the problem, 2004, they do the unthinkable. Keep in mind, this is now 5 years after they did the math. This is after they did study after study, manipulating data, showing and covering up the relative risk of autism in this mercury. And I've got all the studies that they did and all the manipulation, data manipulation and emails, 5 years of covering their tracks. In 2004, the second all that mercury was out, they added flu shots to pregnant women any trimester. It could be the first trimester, second trimester, third trimester, and they added it to babies to their first year of life, one every year after that. So now they've done the unthinkable. Okay, yeah, you're giving it to babies who, it's the whole theory behind mercury causing autism is it's hitting those who can excrete mercury the least effective. Now you're hitting the most susceptible of them all. These are the ones who can't excrete it at all because they don't have any mechanisms to excrete it yet. And we also know through published data and past tragedies that mercury given to a pregnant woman has a high affinity for that fetus, the fetus, and the fetus will actually protect the mother from the exposure because it all goes into the fetus. And that was proven in a big disaster in Minamata Bay in Japan, where a big factory dumped all this mercury into the river that fed the entire village the fish. And the ones who weren't affected, were least affected, were the pregnant women at the time. And of course, the ones that were hit the hardest were the developing fetuses and other children and so forth. So giving a flu shot to pregnant women is catastrophic. We also know thimerosal by itself, through animal studies, will cause miscarriages, will kill fetuses. And then 2009, 2010, keep in mind, pregnant women were not only given a single flu shot, they were given seasonal flu shot, 25 micrograms of mercury, you'd have to weigh 551 pounds to get, and then a swine flu vaccine. This has never in history been done before. And you know, this is all the way up as of 2010, and they're claiming mercury's been removed, the autism rates keep going up, even though their rates are based on children born in 2002. It's unbelievable. It's the blind leading the blind. And it's not even the blind leading the blind. It's the corrupt leading the blind, because the corrupt have figured this out. And we show all their emails in the film, and we show all their – and now we have their scientists talking. 17-year CDC scientist who did three of the big studies disproving a link between vaccines and autism has come out saying, yes, we manipulated the data. We found the links. I can't believe we're giving pregnant women flu shots with mercury in it. I mean, this guy is coming out, wanting to talk, but he's limited to how much he can talk because of a lawyer, of course. But we had some transcripts that were recorded. We included those in the film of what we could, but there's going to be a lot more coming hopefully soon with congressional hearings and so forth is what we're hoping for.
I'd like you to back up a little and share your personal story that you talked about in the film, because I find it very inspiring that you turned something that was really a debilitating situation for you into a positive, and now you're now you've got this incredible documentary film that's changing the lives of so many people. And so can you share what actually, in more, a little more detail than earlier, what actually brought you to that point?
Yeah, so, you know, I was kind of living my life normal. I always had side projects, you know, I worked a lot for my career, but then I had this house I was fixing up. I bought a house when I was 27, and I was out in my backyard building my fence, and there was my neighbor's fence that kind of adjoined my fence that I was installing, and the soil was real rocky, so I was kind of on my knees hand digging the soil with the rocks, trying to get the rocks out, and I bent down a little too far and scratched the top of my head with a rusty nail, and went in and just showered off, and my girlfriend at the time, she's like, well, you better go get a tetanus shot, because I hadn't had one in 11 years, and that's what you do. You know, I'm not anti-vaccine. I was like, okay, yeah, I went and got a tetanus shot. That's kind of what you're trained to do to protect myself from tetanus, from a rusty nail. And I ended up getting severely sick. I mean, sick neurologically, sick physically, sick psychologically. I mean, it goes in, and if you can't excrete mercury as effectively as maybe others can, it will go in and get into your brain, and it can cause a lot of problems by inducing inflammation and get you really good. And it got me really good to where I was almost in a panic trying to figure out what was going on, because new symptoms were kicking up every day. And doctors, when it comes to this, they don't know anything about this. Doctors might have a clue when it comes to acute mercury exposures, which are different. They're very different. That would affect like kidney and liver and maybe go blind and stuff like that. There's totally different symptomology from acute exposures versus chronic. Chronic would be like smaller bolus doses given over time that keeps accumulating in your brain until you hit your tipping point, your threshold, where you have so many symptoms, now you're in big trouble. And that's kind of what it was for me. I had a lot of symptoms as a child, tubes put in my ears, a lot of these visual disturbances, hearing stuff, but a lot of that went away through my, you know, later years in junior high and high school, because I didn't get any exposures to mercury. And then I got a tetanus and an MMR to go to college. A lot of symptoms came on, and I was seeing doctors for years trying to figure it out, but I was still comfortable in life. It was just little things. And I just kind of treated as it's just stress. And, then when I got the shot when I was 29, everything I had as a little baby, everything I had after the tetanus and MMR to go to college, I got one tetanus shot when I was 29. Every single thing came back, added about 1,000 symptoms to that, and that's kind of the state I was in. So I was seeing doctor after doctor. Ultimately, I ended up backtracking my symptoms to the day, like the major symptoms. Everything started when I got that tetanus shot. So at first I thought, I knew everything started there, but I thought, you know, I got tetanus. It's the only thing that makes sense. I scratched the top of my head that day. Everything was fine before then. Post then, I was, you know, symptoms started like a day later almost. And went back to my doctor and said, it's got to be tetanus. Everything started right here. And, of course, the symptoms didn't match. And I got a tetanus shot, so there's no way I had tetanus. And then I eventually went onto my computer. And I don't even know why I did it. This is months into trying to figure out what was wrong with me. I typed in the mercury poisoning, tetanus shot, and everything. I had already come across mercury poisoning extensively, researching my symptoms, but when I asked one of my neurologists, because I was seeing two of them, about mercury poisoning, he's like, oh no, that can just make your foot go numb. And so I knew he didn't know what he was talking about, but at the same time, I ruled it out too, because where would I have been exposed to mercury? And probably was about a few weeks later when I finally figured, you know, backtracked my symptoms to that day, ruled out the tetanus, went back and typed those four words in, and it was hit after hit after hit. I reached out to Andy Cutler, who's a PhD in chemistry from Princeton, wrote a book about mercury poisoning. When I read that book, it was over. I knew this is exactly what I was experiencing. I went to him to find the right person who could treat me with his safe protocol, and literally his protocol took all my symptoms went away, and within 6 months, everything was gone. So it was a very trivial process. And then I ended up getting sick again from another exposure from fluorescent light tubes that you can see in the film too, but very similar yet more I think it was just a bigger exposure, and I had all sorts of more susceptibilities to mercury, because one thing mercury will do when you get an exposure, it'll lower your glutathione levels, and there's a whole reason why it does that, but it lowers glutathione, which is the exact sulfur-based protein you need in your body. If you get an exposure, you have to have adequate levels of glutathione to be able to bind to that and excrete it to the body. And it'll also elevate your testosterone. Testosterone is very synergistic with mercury, hence the 4 to 5 boys to every girl. If you have elevated levels of testosterone and low levels of glutathione, you're a sitting duck. You get another exposure, you're in big trouble. And I got extremely sick again, and that was a very much longer process of recovering from that one because of other external factors like systemic candida and everything else that kind of goes hand in hand with mercury. I had to really get under control before I could even start taking these drugs again to get the mercury out. So
when you were a child, you had autism-like symptoms as well. Is that what you said earlier?
I wouldn't say autism-like symptoms, but I definitely had a lot of the sensory stuff. I had a lot of the visual disturbances that I had when I got the tetanus shot. I had a lot of the ear symptoms, sensitivity to noise. I had tubes put in my ears because of all the ear infections, which is very similar to a lot of these children with autism. I had some of the candida stuff. I had a lot of the stuff. I was definitely shy. I wouldn't say it was any way would be diagnosed with autism. But I think if I hadn't been born in the 70s and I was born post-89, more than likely I'd probably be one of the most severely affected children out there. I mean, I have a major susceptibility to mercury, and that's what a lot of these children have, is that they're very susceptible to the effects of mercury. And you can look at, like, one of the studies I mentioned in my film, and looking at their white blood cells as far as the susceptibility to thimerosal, and you see that children with autism, their white blood cells are much more susceptible to the effects of thimerosal. Now, the interesting thing to that study is, as you increase the exposure levels to thimerosal, you can actually get the typical children's cells susceptibility to match those of the autistic children just by increasing thimerosal levels. So thimerosal makes you more susceptible to mercury. It's like the master neurotoxin, even though it's not alive, it's not alive, but it almost acts like it does because it gets in you and takes down your exact defenses you need for future exposures. It's unbelievable when you look at the science as far as what it can really do.
So what effect is it having on those of us? Now, obviously, I didn't have as many vaccines as a lot of the kids do these days, and neither did you when you were younger. But what effect? You mentioned earlier that your stress levels are higher and you didn't attribute it to anything in particular. Is it possible then that stress that all of us experience to some degree or another could be because of mercury toxicity or accumulation in the body?
Yeah, I think there is zero question everybody on this planet's been damaged by it. The question is, to what extent and what has it caused in you? You know, it might be a little twitch of the eyelid. It might just be a little psychological, kink or something of that nature. It could be, muscle twitching. It could be chronic fatigue. I mean, the extent of what mercury is doing, because not only do we have to worry about these thimerosal exposures, because thimerosal by itself, or mercury, let's say, when you get a mercury exposure, like some of the most fundamental symptoms of mercury exposure, like the first things you'll get are depression and ADD. Those are two of the most fundamental symptoms. So, but if you add all these other environmental exposures, when you've got coal plants that are pumping, when you burn coal, there's mercury naturally within the coal, so it spews it up into the atmosphere. This stuff can travel the globe. Rain drives it down. It gets into the jet streams. Literally, mercury's traveling the globe with the jet streams. Rain drives it down to the ground. We're saturating the entire planet with mercury. China, their future is putting in a new power plant every 10 days for the next 20 years. And that stuff, there's a big Shanghai plume that dumps there's a jet stream that goes straight from China to the west coast of the United States and dumps all that mercury onto the United States. And we've been analyzing a lot the NHANES data, which is really looking at the EPA, I think, manages that. And there's been studies that show, clear back in 1999, EPA said that 1 in 6 women of childbearing age had enough mercury in their blood that's known to cause neurological harm to a developing fetus. And that's clear back in 1999. And then Dan Lacks, a doctor out of UCLA, a researcher, analyzed that same data from 99 to 2005. So this is environmental exposures, basically, and found just in those 6 years, women of childbearing age that had detectable levels of inorganic mercury in their blood, meaning they're so built up with mercury, it's almost pushing inorganic mercury out into their blood, because you shouldn't have inorganic mercury in your blood. He found it went from 2% in 1999, 2% of women had that detectable levels of mercury, to 30% in 6 years. So that's 1 in 3 women, basically, that have chronic mercury buildup. So when they get pregnant, I mean, the best way to detox yourself of mercury is to have a baby, because that baby will absorb a lot of that mercury out of the pregnant mother's body. And so it's not only dangerous to eat fish while you're pregnant, it's dangerous the years leading up to when you're pregnant, because all that stuff stores in you and it'll go right into that developing fetus and really it can cause neurological symptoms by itself. A lot of children are born with autism. Well, why? We have a pretty clear understanding of why. Others are regress right after getting large exposures through a flu shot or what they were getting in DTP and HIV and hepatitis B and all those vaccines. But I think with these environmental exposures, fluorescent light tubes, you know, this whole global warming movement, and I'm very concerned about global warming as well, but at the same time, we've pushed away from the soft whites to the fluorescents and all these squiggly little fluorescent light bulbs and the four footers. You break those, I mean, trillions of those being manufactured around the world, and you break those, it's mercury in them. So if you don't break it in your home or your office, it's going to end up in the dump, it's going to break, and it's going to release out to the living environment. I mean, we are saturating this entire planet with mercury, and then they're putting mercury in people's mouths. Silver fillings are 50% mercury. It's devastating. You know, I haven't touched fish since 2004 because all that mercury comes down into the ocean from these coal plants. And then, you know, the bacteria methylate it, the fish eat the methylmercury, this fish eats this fish, you know, it accumulates, and the bigger fish are far more loaded with mercury. But I just don't touch it. But we are all going to be just neurologically impaired as more and more as the future comes, unless we stop this global disaster. And what I just spoke to at the United Nations, we just showed a film at the United Nations headquarters in New York on Thursday. And one thing I really wanted to address is in 1999, the American Academy of Pediatrics here in America said, we need to remove thimerosal as soon as possible in childhood vaccines. And that's just in this country. 12 years later, when it was on the agenda at the United Nations, there's a Minamata Convention that's trying to do a big global treaty, a global ban on all mercury products and sources globally to protect human health from mercury. Well, as they got to a certain point in these sessions, the American Academy of Pediatrics, same ones who wanted it out of children's vaccines in America, were pushing to keep thimerosal in vaccines given to developing countries. And they were backing up the World Health Organization's stance that we have to use thimerosal in these vaccines given to developing nations. And to this day, every developing nation out there is getting these vaccines fully loaded with our thimerosal vaccines, even the ones we pulled it out from here in America. So we have a complete double standard. And when I showed my film at the United Nations in Bangkok, Thailand, back in November, these delegates had an intense response to seeing the film, because they had been fooled year after year for 5 or so years by the World Health Organization, the American Academy of Pediatrics, saying it's the safe mercury and saying that it's never caused any harm. And then these same delegates watched my film, and, you know, they were bawling. One lady said she didn't know how she was going back to her own country knowing this information. I mean, there was the strongest response I've ever seen. These people do not want mercury in their vaccines. They know they can get it without it. They know we've pulled it out of U.S. vaccines. And we're still trying to figure out, how in the heck can we still be using mercury in flu shots given to pregnant women? I mean, that is beyond a catastrophe by itself, and we know why now. Because the senior CDC scientist, Bill Thompson, told us why. He said if we had fully removed thimerosal out of the U.S. vaccines, we would never be able to justify giving it to developing countries. And that's what he says. That's not what I could ever get myself to believe. That's not what others are saying. This is what the 17-year senior CDC scientist who still works there today, that's what he's saying, is that we keep it in there because we could never justify giving it to developing countries otherwise. And also there's speculation that had they fully removed mercury, 100%, autism rates would have dropped and we would have known the cause and liability would have been exposed, and there would be a lot of people in big trouble financially and ethically and morally and career professionally, I guess. I mean, there's so much consequences if this is actually what's happened. And we know what's happened because we have all their documents that show it's happened. And we have the science that shows it's happened. And the only science you see is these manipulated conflict of interest, totally fatally flawed epidemiologic science that's presented all over world news tonight, you know, that the CDC spoon feeds them the information. This is what this study means, present it to the world. And then when you have all these animal studies done with thimerosal, and thimerosal is introduced or inducing these animals into autism, almost identical with their symptomology, or you have biological and all this biological and clinical science, which is the science you need to do. You should be doing hair studies on children with autism. You should be doing blood studies and urine studies. Biological and clinical science. And the only thing the CDC has ever done is epidemiologic science, number studies, population studies. They can manipulate the numbers in any way they want. They can use exclusion criteria to exclude these populations. And you can have the two most genius epidemiologists do the exact same study and find the exact opposite conclusions. I mean, and they were pushed and recommended by the 2001 IOM. We need more biological and clinical science. And they completely ignored them, did further epidemiologic studies where they manipulated all the data, and we've got all the numbers that show it and the backup that shows it. And then they presented that to the 2004 IOM, and then the 2004 IOM then steps up and says, oh, yeah, you've ruled it out. No more money should be put towards looking at this cause, you know, this link between vaccines and autism. It is unbelievable. So now the IOM has blood on their hands. Now they're going to topple with everyone else if this comes out as truth and fact. And it will eventually. We know truth always comes out. It's a matter of time. And what we're trying to do with this film is speed that time up. Because look at what lead took. It took 20, 30 years to elevate the level of toxicity of lead to where it needed to be and how toxic it was. Mercury's not there yet. But guess what? Lead's like drinking Kool-Aid compared to mercury. There's no comparison toxicity-wise between lead and mercury. And mercury is far more toxic, especially depending on the form. And could you imagine any amount of lead being in vaccines given to pregnant women or babies? This country would be in an uproar, but they just don't know about mercury. The perception has not been elevated to the toxicity that to the nurse medicine. We're trying to really get there so we can stop not only the thimerosal usage, the completely unnecessary use of thimerosal vaccines, also filter the mercury coming out of coal plants and ban these silver fillings because there's so many different alternates. We should not be putting mercury from people's brains. And fluorescent light bulbs, we can go down the LED route. Everything should be going down the LED route. So there's alternates to everything. Literally, like I say in my film, the only reason we're using mercury in any product or any operation is solely for money, and that's it. And it's got to stop.
So I think the entire motivation is financial. What about, have you ever watched that really popular YouTube clip of Bill Gates talking about vaccines reducing population?
Yeah, you know, I don't look into that much, you know, as far as population control. I can't get myself to even look in that yet because I'm so distraught by what the history is, what's happened in history just with thimerosal. To look at the other, that stuff, man, I'm disheartened enough as it is. I don't want to add any more to that yet because I do know a lot of people that are concerned. Have concerns about that. And there, of course, there are concerns about other ingredients in the vaccines. You know, the big question is, if they've gone this far and there was this much gross negligence up to a certain point, and then it crossed from gross negligence to crime against humanity because they figured it out and then didn't do what was right for the children, they did what was right for their own liability and financial purposes. You know, what are they doing with everything else in there? Is everything else safe? We don't know. I mean, there's aluminum. There's all these other theories that could be causing harm as well. So we really want to stop the thimerosal. I mean, this is the biggest one by far. Stop the thimerosal exposures. Expose the corruption so we can get a third-party oversight in there to oversee the integrity of these organizations that are actually exist to protect our health and our children's health. I mean, it's unbelievable that these guys did what they did in the emails that you see in the film. It's unbelievable. Their sole job is to protect us from human or infectious diseases and protect children. And that's why they have this childhood vaccine schedule. It's all about protecting children's health. But when you look at what it really is, when you look behind the scenes and the ties and the conflicts of interest and literally Big Pharma and CDC are, you know, cross-connected in so many different ways. It's almost like one organization. And people are profiting trillions of dollars off vaccines that have no liability for these products. So if this pharmaceutical company that is like offering trillions of product harms one person or two people or 100 people, they have no liability for their product. They can profit trillions. If their product harms anyone, taxpayers are paying for it. Because as of 1986, the Vaccine Act, National Vaccine Act, was introduced, which created the Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, which took all liability out of pharmaceutical manufacturers' hands, because they were coming to Congress saying, look, we're getting sued because these things are damaging children. We're going to stop making them. So Congress stepped up and introduced this bill that took all the liability away from them. And now everyone who gets a shot, there's a surcharge on every shot that goes into a pot. And anybody who's damaged, brain damaged, or die from these vaccines, which we know happens, that's why they created this program, it's paid out of that. And Big Pharma's off the hook. They're laughing all the way to the bank. And it's disgusting. That by itself is a shame. This is done in no other industry except nuclear, in the nuclear industry, nuclear power. And it's unconstitutional because in the Seventh Amendment of the Constitution, it says any damage that occurs over $20, you're allowed a jury trial. This has completely disseminated that. If your child is damaged by a vaccine, you are not allowed, and that's far more than $20 worth of damage. You're not allowed a jury trial. You have to go to vaccine court, which is special masters, judges. So these are, you know, this is government funded science presented by government lawyers to government judges. I mean, it is the most disgusting. Vaccine court is a joke. Let's put it that way, in so many different ways. You know, they're not even medical judges. These are judges. They have no medical or scientific expertise. It's literally there to protect the financial interests of Big Pharma. And that by itself should be overturned. That's a whole different issue. Even if Thimerosal is out, nobody should have free reign profiting trillions of dollars and have no liability on their product, because what it does is it takes away any incentive to make these vaccines safer. Since 1986, we've had negative incentive to make them safer, because you spend $1 on making them safer, that's profit loss. So not only that, they're not spending any money trying to identify the susceptible population. Even if you had milk in these vaccines, there's going to be a small population that's susceptible to the milk in the vaccines. So why wouldn't you want to spend money trying to identify who these susceptible children are so we can save them, you know? And there's no incentive of that, because no one has liability. So no one's looking at that. No one's looking at how to make the vaccine safer. And we're not injecting milk in them. We're injecting mercury, second most neurotoxic element known to man, something that, depending on the form, is thousands of times more toxic than lead. And the only thing more toxic from an element standpoint on this planet is plutonium, which is man-made, you know, radioactive. So this is, in my eyes, the potential of what this is doing, because autism is one piece of this puzzle. Autism was my biggest focus. This is the heart of our country, the heart of our world. These are our children. And for anybody to choose liability or financial over the health of every child on this planet, babies, pregnant women, and so forth, it is sick and twisted. And in my mind, one of the biggest crimes against humanity of all time, because we figured it out. If it was a mistake and it's just gross negligence, and if they had stood up to the plate and said, we messed up, we are going to make this right, everyone's faith in the vaccine program would have been saved instantly, and we would have so much faith in them, and people wouldn't be losing faith in the program, so they wouldn't be getting their children vaccinated, because that's what's happening now. You know, people don't wake up one day and say, I'm just going to become anti-vaccine today so I can get crucified by my family and friends and be called danger to society. No one wakes up wanting that. They wake up because they're opening their eyes and listening to Bill Thompson speak on the internet. And they're seeing the emails, and they're watching trace amounts, and seeing the corruption of what's happened, and seeing how bogus their published data is, that's worse than tobacco science, that disproves a link. And when you open your eyes and start researching this, these legitimate documents, legitimate published studies, and these scientists that still work at the CDC, anybody that cares for their child would be absolutely afraid of giving one of these vaccines. Because of what the CDC, these same people who have caused this Thimerosal disaster are the same ones today who are overseeing the safety of the program. If you know what I know, you'd be scared to death of these things, because these people are more afraid of financial liability than they are of harming your child. And that's the route they chose. And that's disgusting. So what we need to do is fix that system. And guess what starts to happen? The faith starts getting restored into these parents over the vaccine program. And they're like, oh, yeah. Now the program is back to what it should be and what it was meant to be, one that's there to protect human health. And I'm going to get my child vaccinated because I know they're safe. I know that organization is overseeing the safety in every possible way. And that's how you start increasing uptake of vaccines, is by restoring the faith in these parents that the people overseeing the program and the program is safe. And instead, they're putting the boot to the parents' neck and saying, I don't care if you saw Bill Thompson say we manipulated the data. I don't care if you saw my colleague's email that said we manipulated the data and we figured out thimerosal vaccines caused autism. We don't care because we're going to use a bill to force you to get them, or your kid's not getting the education that they deserve per the Constitution. And I'm from California, and you know, it's a constitutional right that every child gets their education, has the right to an education. Well, not anymore, because SB 277, Richard Pan, one of the most corrupt politicians I've ever seen or interacted with. I've interacted with hundreds now, because I literally just got done traveling country with Bobby Kennedy, going state house to state house to state house, interacting with hundreds of legislators trying to fight these bills, because ever since that measles outbreak hit, we thought because they were trying to get ahead of Bill Thompson testifying about all the data he manipulated in regards to the MMR vaccine and autism. But then we saw all these bills starting to hit, and we realized it's a pharmaceutical lobbyist dream. Measles outbreak, we're going for these bills that are going to force vaccinations, take away religious exemptions, philosophical exemptions, and we're going to force these children now to get vaccinated. And not only are they trying to force children to get vaccinated, they're forcing people to buy these pharmaceutical drugs. So if I wanted my child to go to private school or public school, I would not only have to get them vaccinated, and let's say the vaccine program is free, that'd be one thing, but they're actually forcing me to buy the big pharma's product that they're profiting trillions of dollars off, and then if my kid gets damaged, which we know can happen, they have no liability at stake. It's crazy. It's crazy in so many ways. But you know, these bills to force these parents who have beyond legitimate concerns with the vaccine program is insane. It's unconstitutional. It's against the United Nations. It's against it's against everything that we stand for as a country. And it's the Democrats pushing it, which is almost unbelievable. But I get it, you know. And so we're trying to push back hard on those bills, just because if everyone knew the corruption that we know, you couldn't in your right mind in any way even fathom forcing these vaccines on children until they're cleaned up. And even after that, are we really going to force people to do a medical procedure that comes with inherent risks? I mean, if there is a risk, you absolutely have to have a choice. This is not a one-size-fits-all. Let's identify if that's the right thing to do for this child based on his genes, his susceptibility, on what happened to his siblings. There's so many more factors into this. It's time to stop being lazy. It's time to stop just trying to save money at the health and expense of our children, our babies, our future leaders. It needs to be solved. It's just, you know, I can't say enough. I talk a lot here, but you know, there's just so much to this. It's a very complex issue, and it's one that is so dire at this point, because every day pregnant women are getting these flu shots fully loaded with thimerosal. They're having miscarriages. Some are having children born with autism. And then we're wondering, well, why is my kid totally neurologically disabled when we just gave a pregnant woman one of the biggest neurotoxins known to man? This isn't rocket science. This is the most common sense thing ever. And thimerosal, literally, at 10 years, I've been doing this for 11 years now. I started in 2004. Every single factor, there's not one factor of autism that can't be explained with mercury. Mercury explains every single factor. Why it started in 1931, why it remained constant for many decades, why it started to increase in 89, why some are born with it, some regress, why there's 4 to 5 boys to every girl, you know, why they have the exact symptoms they have, why we're reliving an exact tragedy of the past from a mercury exposure and we didn't learn from. Every single factor, why they have low sulfates, elevated testosterone, every single factor. We even know what makes one child more susceptible than others, because everyone always asks me the question, well, if all these children get these vaccines with thimerosal, why aren't all of them, why don't they all have autism? It's explained. And even smoking and lung cancer doesn't have that explained, because we know everyone who smokes doesn't get lung cancer. What makes one more susceptible than the other? We don't know. But we know it causes lung cancer for sure. There's no question. But with mercury and autism, we know what the susceptibility is. It's been totally defined in so many ways. And study after study, I've got 100, I want to say 500 studies that show some kind of link. There's 39 that show a massive link between thimerosal and autism. I've got 187 that shows massive link with all sorts of neurodevelopmental disorders. And I think there's over 500 or so that show how insanely neurotoxic mercury is.
Now, you mentioned this is that the Democrats are moving this forward in California. But I thought it was primarily the two Bush presidencies that really moved the whole thimerosal and mercury and vaccines program forward in the first place. Is it really one side or the other, or is everybody more or less involved in it?
Yeah, I mean, it's become partisan now, but if we go back to from 89 to 92, it was, so there's a lot of ties between the Bush family and Eli Lilly. Eli Lilly founded thimerosal. They're in Indiana. So Dan Quayle, Bush's vice president, his family pretty much runs, has controlling interest of Eli Lilly. So between 89 and 92 is when all these vaccines were added that had thimerosal in it. So there's a lot of, you know, been a lot of big ties between Eli Lilly CEOs and ex-VPs and so forth, and George W. Bush. And that's why he tried, as you see in the film, as you saw in the film, when he added the Lilly rider in there to try to protect Eli Lilly from having any type of liability associated with thimerosal causing damage. They snuck it in at the last minute where no one would see it, no one would read it, and they got it through, and then, you know, there was enough outrage over it, and it drew a lot of red flags. Why are you doing that? And but they eventually overturned it. So, you know, that was kind of isolated because I think there was a lot of ties and connections there. They wanted to do their last minute protection. Now it's more, it's the pharmaceutical lobbyists and it's the Democrats driving it. And we see that in California specifically, it really became a partisan issue where all the Democrats were voting for the bill and all the Republicans were voting against it. And Democrats, for whatever reason, they're the ones, I guess, tied to this cause. Republicans are totally anti, you know, forced medical type procedures, and they really stood up against it. And a lot of these states, once, because I traveled to a lot of these states and we talked to a lot of legislators, and he testified to the Senate executive committees or whatever the different branches were in the different states, because all of them had different bills. Some of them were trying to pull religious and philosophical exemptions. Some were just trying to tighten the exemptions. Some states don't have philosophical, but we're just trying to get rid of the religious. There was a whole array of different bills that were proposed. I want to say there was over 100 bills proposed in 37 or 39 states that we were fighting. So we were literally going state by state trying to get the right information, get the science, show them trace amounts. A lot of the states, all of them, stopped these bills. Oregon overturned it right away. Maine not only stopped the bill, they also took a more proactive stance. One of the representatives introduced a bill that not only, or that would actually protect any type of discrimination. It would ban discrimination based on vaccination status, which is incredible. That's what should happen. And so, but California was a different animal. When we went to California, we were targeting the education, the Senate Education Committee, even though the next day was the Senate Health Committee, but they already had four yeses. One more yes would have went through, and we knew it was going through. So the next week we were really targeting that Senate Education Committee, and the vote started with no, no, no. One more no would have killed it. And I think the chairman told Pan, you better table the bill or your whole bill is going to die in this committee right now. And sure enough, within that next week, they did all sorts of backdoor maneuvers. They pulled Monning, who was a yes from the previous committee, in. They already knew Huff was scheduled to be off the committee. He was a no. He wasn't purposely taken off, like a lot of people suspect, but he was already scheduled to be off. So one no was off, brought a yes in. They did all these backdoor maneuvering. The next day, or the next week, it passed through with flying colors. And, you know, Richard Pan actively tried to stop his fellow legislators from watching trace amounts or talking about Bobby Kennedy, just calling it quackery. And just, you know, half the things he said in his hearings were errors and you know, factual errors. This guy's just blowing smoke everywhere, completely clueless. We talked to him. Me and Bobby and Brian Hooker all had a face-to-face with him. After we had a rally and a press conference and all that kind of stuff. And it was like talking to a brick wall. I felt like I was talking to somebody who was in third grade, wasn't even on the same level of intelligence as us. And he was just kind of like, didn't get it. He just kind of had a blank stare. I feel like he's just kind of a pharmaceutical lobbyist puppet. I feel like his next career should be a pharmaceutical lobbyist because that's all he cares about. He's not out there trying to truly protect the children because he's purposely avoiding information. You know, he doesn't want the information because he knows if he sees it, he's not going to be able to, maybe his conscience will get to him or something. He doesn't want to watch trace amounts. He doesn't want to listen to what the 17-year CDC scientist who did the studies. He doesn't want to hear what he has to say. I mean, it is disgusting. This guy And there's a recall effort. This guy should be recalled in seconds for what he's done. And not only is he going to profit off it because he's a pediatrician, so he's now going to make money off these vaccines. But he's been given money from pharmaceutical companies. And, you know, he's got these pharmaceutical lobbies that drive the whole effort. There's so many ties there between him and pharmaceutical companies and pharmaceutical lobbyists and other known pharmaceutical-tied people. Let's put it that way.
So what's the response on the ground in California with regard with parents and schools there? What's actually happening?
Oh, it's a disaster because a lot of these schools are already enforcing a bill that's not even supposed to – doesn't even take effect till July of next year. So a lot of I've been seeing it all over the place that children are showing up to schools and they're like, do you have all your shots? Because this new bill, SB 277 just passed. You have to be totally caught up. And parents are freaking out everywhere. And some are, listen, think about the ones who don't know anything about this bill. They're like, oh, okay, yeah. And then they just pump them with all these vaccines to get them caught up. And they have no idea. These schools are clueless. This thing doesn't take effect till July. In fact, if this referendum signature is successful, this bill will then be put on the ballot for the public to make the decision. And then it'll won't go into effect at least until after the vote in November of 2016. And then if it fails in the popular vote, then it would take effect. And I don't know if it would take effect in January or immediately. But right now, this bill has nothing to do with anybody. This is business as usual. Kids should be going to school. If they are in any way told you have to get these vaccines because of this bill, they need to contact, you know, somebody instantly. I don't know what authority they would contact, but there's a lot of resources out there on Facebook of parent groups that are really Our Kids, Our Choice is one of them. There's several others that are trying to help be a resource to some of these parents that really don't know what's going on and what this bill means. And I think they were able to fly this bill through and they're very fraudulent behind the scenes way because the overall public really didn't know what was going on. Because even when I talk to general public, people who are very pro-vaccine, they're like, you can't force me to take those in order to go to school. They're totally against it. You know, and I'm not anti-vaccine either. I'm extremely concerned about infectious diseases just like everyone else is, but I want to be able to take a vaccine in the future. If I do have children in the future, I want them to be able to take a vaccine to protect them from infectious diseases. But I want them to be safe, and I want to be able to know if they're susceptible to certain things. You know, there's got to be more research put into this, more money put into this. You can't have trillions of dollars going over here, and they're just laughing all the way to the bank, and nothing over here to protect children. It's unbelievable. So, you know, but as far as the people, the parents in the state who already do know and who have been actively fighting this, they are disgusted. When Jerry Brown signed it without even looking at it, you know, and the bill, a lot of people weren't expecting this bill to go through because they just thought this is the most ridiculous bill. How can you do this? This is beyond anything you can even imagine. And it's beyond, this is America. This is the country of freedom. You know, to force me or my children to get any medical procedure, inject a drug into them to attend school is unbelievable. So, and there's just so many, you know, let's put it this way. A child who has hepatitis B, who has the disease, can go to school. But a child who doesn't have hepatitis B, but doesn't have his vaccine for hepatitis B, can't go to school. What sense does that make? Does that make even the tiniest? There are so many hypocrisies in this bill. It's laughable. And for anybody to have a straight face trying to put this bill through and supporting this bill, they don't know the facts. They could have a straight face because, oh, vaccines protect children. Okay, why don't you look into the details of what this bill says and all the hypocrisies within it. It's laughable, but it's not laughable because of the potential consequences of it. It's absolutely disgusting if you know what could truly happen with this bill going all the way through. So, you know, these parents are irate. They are ready to move out of the state almost instantly. They're almost ready to move out of the country. Thousands and thousands of people I know personally have now single issue completely removed themselves from the Democratic Party and are now either independent. Some have actually even gone over to Republican. So this could take a major hit on the Democratic Party, literally thousands of people. And there was a big effort to push people, you know, unregister as a Democrat, register as independent at the least. And they're doing it all over the place. And this is going to backfire in Pan. And Ben Allen as another clueless politician, a new politician in the Santa Monica area where a lot of his constituents don't vaccinate. I mean, he's going to be gone. He needs to be gone, first of all. He's had extensive conversations with Bobby. We told him to watch the film several times. He never did. And they just don't want the information. Could you not take 90 minutes of your day to watch 10 years of research that explains it all, that every single person who's watched it understands, and not one person's challenged us? Because they watch it and understand it's not anti-vaccine. We're not anti-vaccine. And they wouldn't be arguing with us. When you watch the film, they would be arguing with the CDC. It's their emails. It's their documents. It's their scientists. It's not us saying this. We're just presenting the information. So the only people that really hate us, me and myself and my team, and sometimes Bobby Kennedy, are the people who haven't watched it. Because they're like, I'm not watching that anti-vaccine film. And I'm like, if somebody came to me and said, I'm just totally wrong, I've got a film that disproves you, I would be the first one in the seat, in the front row, wanting the information because of the consequences associated with this issue. If I was wrong, I would be the first one to say I'm wrong. I would be the first one wanting the information. I've desperately seeked information from the other side. In fact, first three years of 10 years, I actively pursued the science that would disprove me, because I didn't want to drop my career, lose my house, lose my fiance, lose my entire life to go down this route if I'm wrong. So I spent 3 years diligently searching for it. I wanted it more than anybody wanted it not to be associated. I don't want thymer cell because of autism. I had no incentive for it to be the cause of autism. And when I saw a big debate between two of the big journalists, I was like, oh my God, I'm finally going to get some information here. I'm going to see where the other side is coming from. And at least I'll understand their points and see they've got some legitimate concerns, and then maybe I can pull out of this. Not even close. It was the exact opposite. This guy got floored, didn't have one remote point. And then when I went on tour and traveled the country, I interviewed every doctor, scientist, EPA, FDA, CDC, AAP, and every doctor. It's not even close. It's like a million to zero. They don't have one tiny shred of evidence that thimerosal is not the cause of autism, not even remotely. In fact, it's the exact opposite. It's a million evidence to zero evidence on the other side. Literally, it would be against the entire universe that thimerosal wasn't a primary cause of autism. I'm not saying it's the only cause. You know, there's a lot of things that could be playing some type of secondary role or some type of effect. But mercury is by far the reason we have an autism epidemic, and has explained every factor involved with that epidemic all the way through time, and even where we are today. Because anecdotally, we're seeing less regressive autism. Anecdotally, we're seeing less severe autism than we did in the 90s and early 2000s. So I don't have any proof of that yet. It's very anecdotal. But when some of those studies come out, it's going to be interesting to see. And it's going to be, I'd love to know the autism rate with the birth cohort 2008. Or no, I wouldn't want that. Because 2009, 2010, they were given double flu shots. I'd want to see like the 2011, 2012 data soon. We're not quite there yet, but I want to see some post 2004 data. And then we know the next rate's coming out, 2004. These are still children who are getting a lot of mercury exposure. So, but once again, they're going to say the rate keeps going up, and we're not even talking about mercury anymore because it was removed. It's like, oh my God, it just drives me crazy.
So I assume a lot of parents are taking their kids out of schools in California because the school year is starting. What are they doing? And in your opinion, what would be the proper response at this point that would be in the power of the people there?
Yeah, I mean, right now they're not pulling their kids out yet. But I know a lot. I'm telling you, these California school systems are going to take a huge hit. Literally thousands and thousands of kids will be pulled out and homeschooled, pulled out of these school systems. And that's going to be astronomical. That's going to be a huge hit to the education system. But right now they can't, they don't have to do it because they can stand up against that. You know, if they try to say you're not welcome in our school because you don't have the vaccine records, as long as they got their philosophical and religious, like they have been able to do for years. And keep in mind, Jerry Brown, the governor who just took away philosophical and religious exemptions, his dad was the one that signed in the philosophical exemption back, I want to say in the 60s, 67, I can't remember exactly when it was. He signed the philosophical exemptions in. Jerry, his son, just abolished it. And right now, I mean, kids should be going to school as usual. They are being fooled because the school systems just don't know what's going on. They are not educated in it. They just think the bill went through. We've got to make sure everyone's got their vaccine schedule. And a lot of kids are going to be harmed that way. But there shouldn't be anything necessary until at least July of next year. If the referendum signatures doesn't happen, if it doesn't get on the ballot, this bill will take effect July, I want to say July 1st of 2016. And then that's when a lot of parents are going to be pulling, you know, that next year. And keep in mind also that if your child is already, and don't quote me on this, there's something to this, but if your child is already in kindergarten, if he's already past kindergarten, not going into kindergarten, he's good until seventh grade. There's checkpoints. I think it's pre-kindergarten and then pre-seventh grade. But if you're already in, if your child's already in first grade, he's good. You don't have to pull him until, I want to say, seventh grade that is where they're going to do the next check. So there's, you know, there's resources out there that have all this information. I don't have kids, so I haven't followed every single detail. I'm not having to worry about when I'm going to have to do what with my child. I've been following more from the political standpoint of how they're getting this bill through instead of what the details of the bill are. So, and there's still some hope. There's the referendum, which if they get the signatures to get on the ballot and then the ballot, the public votes no, the bill's killed. There's litigation. So there's a lot of lawyers that are going to be mounting up to file lawsuits that this is unconstitutional, takes away a child's right to education. And there'll be other lawsuits down the road once a child is harmed. There'll be lawsuits and when I say harmed, I mean not necessarily physically harmed, but harmed in a way where he can't go to school. Maybe some more lawsuits will come to that school system or something. There's a lot of litigation options. There's ballot initiatives that are potentially an option down the road. There's a lot of different options that a lot of people are looking at, but I know it's bringing a lot of big people to this issue that were previously unfamiliar to it because these guys are crossing the line. You know, there's no question they got greedy, and I think this greed is going to ultimately be their demise in the end because all this needs to be exposed, and we literally need to turn the system upside down and shake it to its core and get it fixed because that's what's going to solve the problem. They say this is going to solve the problem because we're going to force these parents to get the vaccines and the rates are going to go up and we're going to have full herd immunity again. Well, they're doing that to the same parents who know what they don't want to, what these guys don't want to know. You know, these are the doctors and scientists and legislators that just don't want to know it because they don't want to know the information because it's just the greater good. There's going to be some sacrifice. No, we're way beyond just a few sacrificed here and there for the greater good. We are at an autism rate of 1 in 68, and that's based on children born in 2002. So it's like, how far do we want to go with this? Do we want to wait till we're 1 in 2 with autism and then we figure it out and then we start resolving it? How far are we willing to go with the rates and damage done to children before we solve this crime against humanity? And we take the people who have done this disgusting act out, and there should actually be criminal charges filed against them with all the details we've seen with Freedom of Information Act documents.
I mentioned earlier how there's also aluminum in vaccines now, which by itself is a toxin. So, but when combined with thimerosal, it becomes exponentially greater, right? Can you talk a little about that?
Yeah, big time synergistic effect. And keep in mind, every vaccine that used to contain mercury and the ones that still do, so mercury is the preservative. It has nothing to do with anything other than just giving it shelf life, basically. And aluminum is an adjuvant. So an adjuvant, when you give an injection, when you give a vaccine, it'll draw an immune response to the injection site. So you start developing an immune reaction or antibodies to whatever the virus or cell or whatever they're injecting into you. So aluminum is another heavy metal. And aluminum and mercury, when combined, are incredibly synergistic. In fact, that's why they don't allow mercury to be brought on flights. They will not allow an airplane. They will not allow it through the mail system because if it gets in an airplane, it'll burn a hole through the aluminum plane. So, I mean, there's a massive synergistic effect. But these guys don't look at that. I swear, these scientists who developed the vaccine program, they don't understand the big picture. There's so much more to the big picture that they're looking at things individually instead of what could be happening in a group. So like a single vaccine, they might do a safety test on, but the vaccine schedule as a whole, they're not getting a single vaccine by itself. They're not testing it with the HIB, with the DTaP and the hepatitis B, and the other shots are given on the same day. I mean, there's so much gross negligence in the safety of this. That's why even Bill Thompson himself says there's no way the safety of the vaccine program should be in the hands of the CDC. There's no way. That's the CDC scientist saying that. It needs to be a third party that oversees that safety. And what we've got to this day is we've got the CDC responsible for figuring out the cause of autism. That's like putting O.J. Simpson responsible for figuring out who killed Nicole. You can't do that. We need somebody else responsible for figuring out the cause of autism, because if our theory's right, the CDC caused it. But they're the ones responsible. They've done all the science that disproved it, and the public has believed it. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. But, you know, news, all the mainstream news media, they're completely bought by Big Pharma. We're censored like mad, even though we have the journalists from these big news organizations watch the film, and they're like, oh, my God, I didn't know any of this. I've been completely fooled in reporting on this for 20 years, and I didn't know any of this. And they are furious about it. And then they go to their higher-ups, and they're just squashed. No way. We can't talk about that. We'll lose our big pharmaceutical sponsor, and we'll lose our millions and millions and millions a year in pharmaceutical advertising. And we've seen that over and over and over, and I've seen it with doctors and pediatricians. These guys approach me after a lot of our screenings like, oh, my God, I didn't know any of this. Like, I can't believe what the CDC's done. And because they trust the CDC, pediatricians, for example, you know, that's their daddy. The CDC does all the science on all these vaccines that they pump in every child every day. Now they come up to me and they're freaking out because they give these in blind trust with the CDC, and then they see the CDC's emails and their documents. And they can't believe it. I had people come up to me saying, I want to take an AK-47 of the CDC. That's what they tell me. And these are doctors that tell me this, because they have been fooled, and by their hand, they've been misled and done this, you know, injected dimerosal into pregnant women and babies and so forth. And they can't believe it. So the response has been almost overwhelming, as it should be, because the information is very scary. It's very scary to even remotely for a second believe that the CDC could have done this. I almost feel like sometimes, how can this be true? How can this be true? How could they have done this? And myself, and I've seen it a million times, and I've pieced all the documents together. You know, I didn't obtain all these documents. It was everyone else. All these organizations and truth seekers that have gone through the Freedom of Information Act to get these. And then I've become friends with a lot of them over time as I've been traveling. And they get me all these documents that are obtained through the system, through the government system of the Freedom of Information Act. And then it's all, you know, I spend a lot, thousands of time, hours or whatever, trying to piece it all together. But when it's pieced together, it is literally, it's unfathomable what they did. It really is.
So tell me about Andrew Wakefield and the research that he's done. If you do some research on him online, the mainstream consensus is that he issued some very fraudulent reports about the effects of mercury on autism and so on. What do you know about that research?
Well, Wakefield actually, and a lot of people get this confused because they kind of group in everything into vaccines and Wakefield into vaccines. And Wakefield, you know, his research primarily and everything that he's been known for is in regards to the MMR vaccine. And the MMR vaccine has never contained thimerosal and still doesn't. It's a triple live virus vaccine, so you can't put thimerosal in it. It'll kill the live virus. So MMR, his research is specific to that. And the study, his study that was retracted was specific to the MMR vaccine. And it was more of so just kind of shown a link, not necessarily to MMR and autism, but MMR, children with autism have this some gastrointestinal problems or whatever associated with the MMR vaccine. Therefore, there might be a link. And then he's been crucified for it. You know, of course, if you question the vaccine program, I don't care if you question anything in the vaccine program, you're going to get crucified. This is like the Holy Grail. You don't criticize this. And I kind of look at it from the standpoint of, what if we identified a significant flaw in a car and we were pushing to get that fixed? Would we really be anti-car? You know, that doesn't make any sense. We want something fixed in the vaccine program that can be fixed and has been fixed in some vaccines already. So we know it's doable. Why does that make us anti-vaccine? Even though we do know there's a lot of people out there who are anti-vaccine. But, you know, so Wakefield's research is really isolated from ours. You know, I'm 100% specific to thimerosal and mercury. I don't know much about aluminum on its own. You know, I've studied the synergistic effect with mercury. I don't know much about the MMR vaccine and if that can cause harm. I haven't looked at, like, the aborted fetal tissue or formaldehyde or a lot of these other ingredients in the vaccines. I spent 10 years just trying to get to the bottom of the mercury one. I feel like it would take me 100 years to get to the bottom of the others. But at the same time, I feel like the mercury one exposes all the corruption within the system that is enough to open every door wide open to reanalyze every single component of these vaccines from a safety standpoint. You know, aluminum is a heavy metal. That's a legitimate concern. There's been some studies out there that show it can cause a neurological harm and so forth and get into the brain. And that should be extensively studied now that we see what has definitely been done with thimerosal. So there hasn't been much done on aluminum yet. There's just a lot of unanswered questions. There might be some answered questions. Same with MMR. I still think there's a lot of unanswered questions. There's definitely a lot of people that believe MMR causes autism. I was actually going to address MMR and thimerosal in my film, but there was just way too many unanswered questions still with MMR. I just couldn't concretely answer every single question when thimerosal answers everything. And with some of these other ingredients, I couldn't answer it, and I don't think the research is there to fully answer it yet. There might be some indication that there is being harm caused, but I just couldn't get to the bottom of it, and I wanted to be very scientifically and historically sound in everything that I present. And if I'm speaking to an audience and I get challenged by somebody who knows this inside and out, I want to be able to have an answer for every single question. And the only thing I can do that for is thimerosal. There's not one question that anyone could get me on at this moment. There's not, because it's so historically sound. It's so scientifically sound. And it's not only historically and scientifically sound with all these scientists and everything done in history, but it's scientifically sound with the CDC scientists as well, or their science, the science they did, and their scientists that have talked to me. It's sound in so many ways that when you're coming at this issue, you're going to be putting yourself on a pedestal to just be chopped at the knees. And just, you got 100 targets on you, and they're going to try to take you out with the smallest one they can. And these other things, I think, leave a lot of vulnerability to that, because there are still some significant unanswered questions. Like MMR, for example, I'll just throw one out there. You know, MMR didn't exist for a lot of decades that autism was around. And then when it was introduced, it's a perfect test case. MMR was introduced in the entire population in this country, yet autism remained the same. So the autism rate didn't go up. That's a big question I couldn't answer. And with a question of that caliber that I can't answer, I can't go down that route. So I haven't put that much time and effort into researching a lot of these other ingredients, even though I know there are a lot of people concerned, a lot of big scientists and doctors that are concerned about them, and they're more likely playing some type of role. I just couldn't get to the bottom of if it's a primary role, secondary role, or no role. So Andrew Wakefield's research, I can't really speak to that much, as well as all these other toxins that could potentially be playing a role as well.
So, let's say you have a child with autism now. Are there any alternatives or any therapies you found that are successful? And I know that you did use some different things to treat yourself when you had those symptoms. What out there has proven itself as consistently reliable to treat autism symptoms, and is there anything out there that's been 100% successful in every case, or are there some autism cases that are just beyond, at least at the moment, beyond repair?
Yeah, definitely not in the 100% category. There's no treatment that's 100% effective. I mean, I've seen a lot of children recover, but it's very multi-modality. I mean, you have to treat them. The movement that's really working and the movement of doctors, the approach that's really working, is the biomedical approach. So these children, you know, autism is pigeonholed into this psychological condition because it's defined by the American Psychiatric Association. So every list of criteria is a psychological thing. You could almost define an autism criteria that you could diagnose on based on their physical symptoms alone. So the American Psychiatric Association is missing half of the condition. So good luck trying to figure out what's causing the condition when you're only looking at half of it. So a lot of the mainstream doctors, psychologists, whatever, psychiatrists that treat these children are like, oh, here's a psychological drug. Sorry, we don't know what causes autism or how to cure it. There's no cure. But here's a drug that'll treat your psychological symptoms and send you home. That is crazy. That is unbelievable. But when you take the biomedical approach and treat the children from a cellular level, really look at what's going on in their blood, their mineral analysis, their amino acids, look at everything, what's going on in their hair, what's going on everywhere in their body. Trying to get to the bottom, let's try to supplement those areas while getting the mercury out, while fixing the leaky gut, while getting rid of the candida, while trying to get other heavy metals out potentially. This multifaceted approach to try to restore the children's health in so many different ways. A lot of children are recovering, some fully, some substantially, some maybe more mediocre, and some maybe not much at all. There's so many different variables to it. First of all, how affected you were, how old you were when you were affected, and how much damage had occurred, and how early you start the treatments. Like when I got sick, I started relatively very early in regards to my exposure and how far along I was in my sickness, and I started it right away, and maybe that's why I recovered so quickly and so easily. But also, my brain was fully developed. I was a full-grown adult when I got the exposure. These children, their brain's developing, and they're trying to build all these bridges and pathways and, you know, neurons and everything, and need all this methylation to help their brain develop. And so when you get affected in that state versus somebody who's already got a fully developed brain, it's going to be different. So, but I mean, there is tremendous hope for recovery in these children. If I had a child right now with autism, I would have big time hope that I could get my child better. And, you know, I would go after the mercury, of course, getting the mercury out of the brain. That is going to be one of the most primary things. But at the same time, there's all these other things going on secondary to mercury, like candida always goes hand in hand with mercury. Leaky gut goes hand in hand with mercury. There's all these things that you can kind of help repair and fix in the meantime while you're getting mercury out that play a big role in recovery as well. So if you have leaky gut and they're eating foods now and it's going into undigested food particles, getting into the bloodstream and inducing all this autoimmunity, and a lot of the stuff's going into the brain. I mean, there's the realm of spectrums. That's why the spectrum of symptoms is so broad. All these children, of course, have a lot of the foundational symptoms of autism, like, you know, self-stimulating, like hand flapping or sensitivity to noise or visual stimulation, you know, sensory type stuff. But there's all sorts, you know, some have seizures, some have rashes. The spectrum of symptoms is so broad that, you know, this child might be in here, this child might be in here, this child might be here and here. You know, it varies so much. But if you get down to the core of what their symptomology is, a lot of it is very in sync with each other. You know, they're totally social withdrawal, kind of in their own world, hand flapping and toe walking and sensitivity to noise and sensitivity to light and all the sensory stuff, not wanting to be touched and a lot of the stuff that is kind of specific to the core group of them. There's tremendous hope. I would get to the right doctors, the right scientists who treat it from a biomedical approach, and just go find somebody you trust and just go for it.
What sort of chelation substances have you found out about that seem to work fairly well to remove the mercury out of the body? Whether it's a child with autism or for the rest of us who may just have mercury exposure from just environmental factors, if we want to clear some of that up.
Yeah, the first time, so my first sickness from the tetanus shot, I followed Andy Cutler's protocol. So I used DMSA, which is a chelator. It's called chelation when you buy into mercury and other metals and kind of excrete them out. DMSA is a drug. It's a prescribed drug. It's a drug, like if your child got lead poisoned, they would give them DMSA to help get the mercury lead out, but it also binds to mercury. So I did DMSA for the first 3 months, and the theory is to kind of rid the mercury from your extracellular compartments, your blood and all that kind of stuff, before you start alpha lipoic acid. Because when you start taking a drug that crosses the blood-brain barrier, you don't want to pull mercury from other areas of your body and put it in your brain. It's going to make you worse. So for 3 months, I took DMSA to kind of clear everything else out. And then once I started alpha lipoic acid, which is a strong antioxidant, you can get it at Whole Foods. It's water-soluble. It's double thiol, so it'll cross the blood-brain barrier. It'll bind to mercury. And took that for 3 months. Once I started taking that in conjunction with the DMSA, within probably a week or two, I noticed certain symptoms were gone, and week after week, symptoms were going away. And 3 months into that, so 3 months of DMSA, 3 months of alpha lipoic acid, all my symptoms were gone. And then the second time, from the fluorescent light tubes that you see in the film, I was so much more severe, because I think that first hit, that tetanus shot hit really kind of, this is way before I knew all the science of how this works. And so my testosterone was elevated, my glutathione was lower. So now I'm sitting duck. Then I get this exposure the exact same time I was taking a break from chelating because I was studying to take the LSAT. So I didn't want mercury to be moved around. I wanted to have a clear head. So at the exact same time, I took a few month break from chelating. Even though I was already recovered, you want to keep chelating for like a year or so to get all of it out. So I took a little break. I got that exposure right at the same. If I had still been on my chelation protocol, probably wouldn't have never got sick again. It probably would have bound to it and excreted it. But the second time I was so sick, I had such severe systemic candida, which is an overgrowth of yeast, basically, that I didn't take the chelation drugs for like a year because those are sulfur-based drugs. Sulfur-based drugs will bind to mercury, but they also feed candida. So I literally spent a year just taking Diflucan to get the yeast under control. And once I got that under control, I didn't want to have the risk of the candida coming back because that's pretty severe and pretty horrible by itself. So by that time, I was already well into the research, talking to the doctors, talking to the scientists. I was trying everything else I could do to naturally boost my glutathione levels. Like specifically, there's those two pathways you see in the film, methylation and transsulfuration pathways. There's these two circles that ultimately result in the production of glutathione. And so I saw some research done by Jill James that showed if you supplement these areas within these two circles, which is folinic acid with methyl B12 shots and trimethylglycine, it, in children with autism, it stabilized their methionine levels, homocysteine levels, and glutathione levels on its own. And some of their symptoms went away. So I gave that a shot. I was also doing Boyd Haley's OSR product. That was a chelator he developed that really helps bind the mercury and other metals and get it out. I did Gerson type stuff, you know, coffee, where the theory with Gerson therapy is there's an acid in coffee that goes up to the liver and stimulates production of glutathione by 700% in the liver. And the caffeine stimulates your bile ducts and you literally just dump toxins out. You boost glutathione by 700%, it's neutralizing free radicals, binding the heavy metals, and literally the toxins on. That worked miracles for me, really. That almost, over time, man, I just felt like that cleared my head. I just put me in a whole different state. What else have I done? IV, a lot of IV, like Meyer cocktails, like big vitamin C drips, 5-gram vitamin C drips, or B vitamin drips, or glutathione pushes. I've done everything. You name it, I think I've done it. And I have a pretty good feel for what works and what doesn't. You know, I think Andy Cutler's protocol, if you can tolerate it, because it's really hard on the gut, it'll really screw up your gut from a candida standpoint. If you can tolerate that, that's, in my mind, still the best way to go to get the mercury out of the brain. Because a lot of these others, like DMSA, a lot of these other chelators that people use all the time, do not cross the blood-brain barrier. And if you really want to recover from this, you have to have a drug that crosses that blood-brain barrier and pulls it out of the brain. Because I've run into autism mom after autism mom after autism mom saying, oh, it's, you know, it's not the mercury. I'm like, okay, why? Why do you think so? And, oh, well, we tested their blood and their urine. There's just no mercury in their hair. Well, that's how mercury works. Unless you had a recent exposure of like 72 hours, it's not going to be in your blood. It's not going to be in your urine. In fact, it'll be at lower levels in your hair because he's not able to excrete it like a typical child. It'll be higher in typical children because you know they're being exposed to this mercury stuff. And even when they're chelating, they're doing DMSA challenge tests, which still isn't in any way reflective of what's coming out of the brain. I think the alpha-lipoic acid is the key to get it out of the brain. You can clear your blood and body all you want of this stuff, but until you get it out of the brain, you're not going to recover from the major, major neurological symptoms and psychological symptoms.
And the candida that results from that, is that just a temporary symptom, or is it a permanent issue you have to deal with if you use that right away?
No, you can deal with it. I mean, you can manage candida through probiotics and eating a diet that's low in sugar, low in carbs. It's just tough. Like I struggled with it so much because I couldn't, I was weak. I couldn't not eat sugars. I couldn't not eat carbs.
So, have you ever tried carnivore? Does that work?
I haven't tried that. What is that?
It's, it's actually the Venus flytrap extract from that plant. It is highly effective against candida.
Oh, well, I'll have to check that out. Yeah. Because I think I still have some candida stuff. I have some ADD stuff. All my symptoms are gone except for maybe ADD, and even that's better under control now, but I still have some candida issues, I can tell, like when I eat bread and stuff like that.
Are you familiar with Michael Merzenich, Dr. Michael Merzenich?
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, he's his area is in the field of neurocognitive therapy. Have you done any research or familiar with the effectiveness of neurocognitive therapy on autism at all?
I haven't, no. Okay. What is that exactly, neurocognitive?
Well, it's basically retraining the brain to build new neurons through some complex brain exercises and so on. It's been highly effective. He's an expert in that field. He's got a website. I think it's called brainhq.com. I'm sort of guessing on that, but he has an institute where he treats autism children with using neurocognitive therapy. He's not the only one doing it, but he's one of the foremost people in the field.
Cool. I like the sounds of it for sure.
Yeah. I mean, it increases intelligence in general, but for children who have autism already, it seems to even by itself, without the detoxification, have an effect on that.
Awesome. And I know there's been a lot of tremendous results with hyperbaric oxygen chamber as well.
Yes.
Or hyperbaric oxygen therapy has, anytime you're trying to restore the effects of brain damage, force oxygen back into the areas of the brain. I mean, I haven't personally done it. I've tried it once. I've definitely wanted to do it. I just haven't had time. But I would love to experiment with that as well, because I've heard a lot of tremendous results from that. There's so many things like that, that there's so many different avenues. This time in history, we're not just tied by what the doctors can do anymore. We have so many resources. You have to be careful, because there's a lot of quacks out there too, but we have everything at our disposal, just with our fingertips and our laptop, talking to people who have similar conditions or have a child with autism. What have you done? What's worked? What hasn't? There's so many resources out there. I view doctors as nothing but just another resource. You really have to take your health in your own hands, your child's health in your own hands. Do not rely on a doctor to know it all, because they don't. Some of the, hundreds of thousands of misdiagnoses a year and misprescribing stuff. And, I think the place you go to get sick is you go to the hospital, and that's where you get sick, or that's where you get the wrong surgery, or you get the wrong drug, or you really got to take the health in your own hands and protect yourself, and just have your eyes so open to what's going on, and don't have blind trust in the medical community. Don't have blind trust in your doctor. That is a scary thing, and that's where I went wrong. I had blind trust. I scratched the top of my head with a rusty nail, had blind trust in the system, went down and got my shot, and it ruined, literally for years and years, ruined my life. So.
Have you heard of Dr. Dietrich Klinghardt of the Klinghardt Academy?
Yeah, that name definitely sounds familiar.
Yeah, he's been treating autism. What he found was that there is a link between autism and electromagnetic fields, particularly smart meters and so on. And so he's been going into the homes of children with autism and identifying EMF fields and basically mitigating for those in some way or another, and has had dramatic results actually in just doing it that way. And he's also a big proponent of using certain Chinese herbs such as medicinal mushrooms, which seem to be quite effective as well. So it seems like there are a lot of opportunities out there for treatment and improvement of those symptoms.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think when I was sick, I was going after everything too. I wouldn't have my eyes closed to, even if I thought something sounded a little weird, I didn't care, because I was so desperate to recover. I was willing to try anything and everything, because there's so much out there that why would you shut your eyes to anything? If there's, I would never shut the gates to an avenue of a way to potentially recover from anything. And you got to understand too, let's just take mercury, for example, what it does to your brain and your body. It by itself leaves you much more susceptible to other things like pesticides and household cleaners and all this other stuff. EMFs probably are much more damaging because of all this kind of stuff. So you add all this kind of stuff together and imagine, because it's not just mercury they have in their brain and they're having problems with. There's all these other things going on with chemicals, just normal household products and shampooing your carpet and those chemicals and just the soaps you get every day and the shampoos you get every day and women who wear all this, toxic stuff on their face. I mean, it's crazy how many chemicals are out there exposing us every day. And you add all that up, and it's scary. So I basically use nothing. I barely use anything daily because I want to minimize my exposure. It just opened my eyes to, I never used to be like this. I just used regular detergent and regular toothpaste with fluoride on it. And now my eyes are just, I just want people to open their eyes that there's much more than you're potentially being told.
So could the pharmaceutical industries easily replace mercury as a preservative with something that's non-toxic?
Yes, and in fact, they were willing to do it. It was the CDC that kind of stalled them from doing it. They didn't want to affect the free market economy, and that is disgusting. But, we've already got proof that they can do it, because they did it. They removed it from the DTaP, HIV, and hepatitis B. And they did it by doing single-dose vials. And there are other alternatives as well. So when you have a single-dose vial, you don't have to worry about introducing bacteria. It's a preloaded syringe that would be in the refrigerator. No bacteria is going to grow. So other vaccines use 2-PEs, 2-phenoxyethanol, as a different preservative other than thimerosal. There is a toxicity level to it, but nowhere near thimerosal. There's phenol is an alternate, 2-PE, which is 2-phenoxyethanol, that's an alternate, and then thimerosal. And I think 2-PE of the three is the far the least toxic of them, and they use that in some cases, but also just the single-dose vials. You don't need a preservative. Refrigerated, loaded dose, boom, no mercury required, no phenol, no 2-PE, and it's solved. So for 51 million flu shots to still contain the full 25 micrograms is inexcusable in this country. The argument with developing nations is they need that cold chain. You know, they need a much bigger capacity of cold chain storage to get single-dose vials out to these developing countries, which is a legitimate concern. But they already need cold chain storage because you can't have multi-dose vials cooking in the heat either. So, you know, it comes down to money. The U.S. doesn't want to fund that. Bill Gates doesn't want to fund that. Nobody wants to fund that. These are developing nations that we're just going to throw them the vaccines we don't want to give our own children. And Nigeria just reported 380,000 cases of autism and said autism is the fastest growing neurodevelopmental disorder in their country. Well, gee, I wonder why. Because you're exposing every child with the biggest neurotoxin known to man almost, you know, from an element standpoint. And it's scary to a lot of these other developing countries don't analyze their rates. They don't have the resources to do that. They don't even have the resources to make the diagnosis. Imagine how difficult it can be to have a child with autism in this country. Imagine living in a third world country or a developing nation country with a child with autism. They're shunned. They're looked at as like being possessed. They're completely shunned by society. It's not accepted there. It's unknown there. It's mysterious there. And there's no resources there. So everyone just kind of keeps it hidden and they don't talk about it. It's devastating what we could be potentially doing in these countries. And when these delegates saw it at the United Nations in Bangkok, when we showed it twice to all these different delegates, they were hit hard by this. And they understand what's going on now. And they also understand what they were told by those who removed thimerosal from that treaty. Because they actually got to the point where thimerosal was excluded from the ban. Unbelievable. Because they are so concerned. I sat there in the plenary with hundreds of people who their number one objective as delegates is they are so concerned about mercury exposures and environment and fillings and everywhere else. But the number one most dire thing where you're injecting it directly into pregnant women and babies, we're going to exclude that and leave that be. It's unbelievable. And that's got to be turned around. And that's kind of the reason we showed it at the United Nations headquarters. We really want to reengage and get thimerosal back into that global treaty because the United Nations by themselves could stop this worldwide crisis. They have the potential in the Minamata Convention to include thimerosal in that ban and wipe this disaster out. Not the full disaster, but at least whatever major role thimerosal is playing in it, because we know it's playing a major role, that major role will be solved. And then we can all the doors will open everything else and we can focus on everything else that might be causing harm. You can never be too safe when it comes to our children. You can't be too safe.
I know it's a little bit anecdotal, but in your documentary film, you speak with the Amish and they don't really experience any of these diseases and they don't vaccinate. So is it possible that vaccines are maybe not even necessary? I mean, or have there been any studies, actual studies that have been done other than anecdotal evidence that might point in that direction?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. You're right. The Amish is a very tricky one. It's pretty much anecdotal. We do know that some Amish vaccinate. So if you go to the Amish communities that vaccinate, you do see the autism. The Amish communities that don't, you really don't see it. I think one area, Dan Olmstead did a pretty extensive investigative journalism report. I think he found three cases where there should have been a lot more, hundreds of cases. And those three cases were confirmed to have either got their vaccines or one lived downstream of a coal-fired power plant or something like that and got the vaccines, I think. So anecdotally, it's very interesting. Why are the Amish not at 1 in 68 or anywhere near that if they're not vaccinating? And then, you know, people always say, well, they're different. They have different lifestyles. They're very natural in what they do as far as what they eat. And there's all sorts of different factors that could be playing a role in that. But all we want, you know, we want a vaccinated versus unvaccinated study. It's a study that CDC will never do because they come up with every excuse in the book. Well, we can't hold vaccines. Can't we hold vaccines ethically from a subset of children because then they could get infectious diseases? Well, you don't have to, because guess what? There's 30,000 children that aren't vaccinated already that you can compare them to. And not Amish. I'm talking in Chicago, Mayor Eisenstein, who's since passed, had like 30,000 patients unvaccinated. Didn't have any autism in his clinic. He didn't know of one case of 30,000 children where he should have had hundreds. And, you know, yes, because of religion, they might have some differences in how they do things in life and every day, but let's do a starting point there. Let's really see if they don't have autism and see if maybe that's the reason. But they have every excuse in the book why they won't do this study. And you would think if they were so vested in disproving the link between vaccines and autism, as they've spent millions of dollars, millions and billions of dollars probably by this time, doing studies that have massive conflicts of interest and manipulating the data, if they really wanted to disprove this and shut everyone up, they would have done that study a long time ago. But why do you think they haven't? Because they know what they're going to find. And that's what Bernadine Healy, the ex-director of Health and Human Services, NIH, National Institutes of Health, she said they're not doing the study because they know what they're going to find. And there's no question. Otherwise, they would have done it over and over. They would have done it instantly. But the reason they haven't done it is because they know what they're going to find. And because they have the answer already. They already did this study in 1999. After 1999, that initial Verstraten study, their science was specific to rule it out. They targeted Denmark and Sweden, where they had the perfect population where thimerosal was removed. The rates went up. But they also knew that the second thimerosal was removed, they changed the diagnostic criteria. And they added Copenhagen Clinic, which accounts for 20% of their autism diagnosis, to the registry. And they started adding outpatients, children that were diagnosed in doctor's office and clinics, outpatients outside of the hospital. For years and years and years, Denmark, their autism registry and their rates only included children who were diagnosed in a hospital, when they were admitted to a hospital. That's hardly any children with autism. So now they add the outpatients to the rates. The rates just launch, but it happened to be the exact same time thimerosal was taken out, and that CDC just salivated over that data because they, oh my God, we can disprove it this way. And we see exactly what they did. It's disturbing. This is far beyond smoking and lung cancer and tobacco science. This is far beyond it, because that was the tobacco companies creating the science. This is our government covering this up and creating the science. And this is the government agency that is specific to protecting children from infectious diseases. And we've now caused one of the biggest childhood epidemics of all time, man-made.
So why is it, do you suppose, that the mainstream mass population is unconscious of this? Is it just simply cognitive dissonance, or is there some other reason why most people don't want to watch your documentary or even open their minds to the possibility that mercury could be a risk?
Mass propaganda. I mean, I view it like this. When I watch TV, I'm wondering if I would be fooled too, because I see ABC News, World News Tonight, or whatever it is, new study by the CDC, no link between vaccines and autism, mercury and autism. And then, oh, mercury's been removed since 1999. The rates have gone up 50% in the last 4 years. And I think I would be fooled by that. And then the omnibus autism decision, no link found between vaccines and autism. And over and over and over, it's instilled, instilled, instilled. So I have these people from the public who are like, don't even want to hear it, but they don't know anything about it. And I even have journalists, like, I'll give you an example. At my premiere in Hollywood on February 4th, a big-time journalist or a journalist from a major, I'm not going to say the news network, but from a major one came up to me and was very critical, interviewing me. And I'm like, you know what? Watch the film. And she stayed and watched the film, and she came running up after me and said, oh, my God, I'm going home to have the biggest argument of my life with my husband, because he's a huge journalist with this organization. He's totally against you. I write for this organization. I was against you, but now I'm totally for you. And I'm going home to have the biggest argument of my life with him, because I didn't know any of this. And sure enough, she got home, forced him to watch it. I sent them a link. And he was cussing. She said he was cussing having to watch it at the beginning. Then started taking notes. By the end, he's totally convinced. And both of them brought it up to their upper management to get this shown and get this information out there, and they were squashed. And it's happened over and over. I'll call out Huffington Post. They are a joke of an organization. Huffington Post, two of their journalists who have been writing for them for years, one has written over 100 articles on Huffington Post. The other one has worked for them for like 9 years or written for them for 9 years. Both, separate times, one watched the film, interviewed us, posted on Huffington Post. Within 30 minutes, it was taken down. And then she told me what happened. They said, we're not publishing anything that even remotely hints at a link between vaccines and autism because the CDC has ruled it out with their science. And then the other guy, even Bettis, saying, I'll never be censored on Huffington Post. Watched the film, interviewed us, wasn't even able to post it. So it's disgusting the amount of control big pharmaceutical companies have over our mainstream. I think it's 70% of their advertising money comes from big pharma. You know, advertising everything from Viagra to things that kill you in the side effects. I mean, it's unbelievable the amount of control these companies have over our mainstream media. And even the head of one of the major networks told Bobby Kennedy that, if any of his people had ever lost them a pharmaceutical sponsor, they would be fired instantly. I mean, it's horrible. We got to get the control. You know, other countries don't allow this. I think New Zealand's the only other country that allows pharmaceutical drug ads. Why are we going to promote a pharmaceutical drug to people? I mean, that's for the doctor and the pharmaceutical people to figure out if that's right. It's embarrassing that we allow those type of drugs to be played in this country. And but it gives all the control to big pharma because they control everything with money now. And people like us who are trying to solve a crime against humanity are suppressed because money over children in this country. It's really scary.
So is there any hope, do you think? I mean, the work that you're doing, is it making actual progress on the ground level? Obviously people are watching your film, but is it creating actual change that you're currently aware of?
Yeah, I mean, that's the big question. You know, I think it has already in a lot of these different states that are fighting these bills. So that's a good thing. Like Oregon they had the first bill that really came fast track, and they told Bobby, you can come up here, but there's nothing you can do about it. This bill's going through. And Bobby brought trace amounts up there, testified to their legislators, talked to them about the science, and a bunch of them came and saw the film at a theater. And within 48 hours, 72 hours, something like that, the bill was killed. And that's happened at a lot of these different states. So, I mean, there's change. There's stuff like that that has helped, that we've already driven some change. But the big picture change, I'm going for thimerosal removed from all vaccines in this country and developing countries. That has to happen. I mean, it's hard for me to sleep at night knowing every pregnant woman out there could potentially be getting a flu shot with the full 25 micrograms of mercury, and all these kids in Africa and India and developing countries are just being annihilated with it all over because of money reasons, and that's it. And we already know what it's done to our children and caused autism and other neurodevelopmental disorders, and we know this, and we're still giving it to them. So I'm not going to be satisfied until that problem is resolved, at a minimum. But I'm also concerned about the environmental exposures. There's going to be a certain point where we no longer need thimerosal. It doesn't even matter anymore because of this environmental freight train coming at us with all these, because of fluorescent light tubes and coal plants and saturating the entire planet. Thimerosal is not even going to be needed to have the exact same result. And so there's a lot to this. That's why I've got the nonprofit organization called Go Mercury Free. That's focused on really spearheading. Trace Amount's objective is really get the information out there so the public's aware of it, so they can protect themselves. And I'm hoping with them being armed with this information that the demand goes away, so the supply will go away. If people understand what's in these flu shots, and they're like, no way am I going to allow, after getting the information, no way am I going to allow you to give me one of those with thimerosal in it, the supply will eventually go away. And if everyone starts going down the LED route, fluorescent light bulbs will go away. So we're slowly creating change in that regard, but we got to do it much faster than that. We've got to have some big things with the United Nations, big things with the EPA, who's now opened their eyes to this. We need the organizations who do have some ability to make this big change, make it, because we know the ones like the FDA and the CDC will never, the ones who easily could will never because of the blood on their hands. But we do have EPA big time. Their eyes are open. We got some big time players coming in and seeing this and really starting to engage with us in many fronts. So we're hoping,
go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, so we're hoping pretty soon maybe we'll have a major victory, because we need a major victory. It's the slow stuff is tough because we know people are being damaged in the meantime.
Yeah, the funny thing about the CFL, the compact fluorescence, is that they actually do cost more to operate than a regular light bulb.
Do they really?
They do, yeah.
Oh, wow. That's interesting to know.
The cost is actually more, yeah.
What about LEDs?
No, LEDs are much more efficient. I mean, they cost a lot more to purchase, but there's no real. Now, I'm not familiar with what kind of transformer they use in them, so I haven't really looked into that. But LEDs by themselves don't use a lot of electricity to power, unless they're putting some kind of a ballast or in it that's using a lot more power, then they should be more efficient. Cool. And they're not by themselves dangerous at all, obviously.
Yeah, I'm hoping, and I'm seeing the industry go that route, but man, I don't go anywhere near a fluorescent light bulb. I would never have one in my house. I am scared to death of those things.
Yeah, I mean, they're very hard to dispose of as well. I mean, what do you do with them?
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly. Yeah, you got to find the right place. You break one. Imagine breaking one of those in your kitchen, or your pregnant wife, breaking a couple of the 4-foot fluorescent light bulbs on your kitchen floor, sweeping it up, can't see or smell the mercury vapors, have a child who's completely neurologically impaired, you would never, ever pin that back to that fluorescent light tube. And I guarantee that's happening all over the place.
So suppose that happens to somebody, will some of the chelation techniques you mentioned earlier be a good possible approach to mitigating for that, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I think anybody who's got any neurological disease, you have MS, you have ALS, you have Parkinson's, get the mercury out of your brain. Whether it's causing it or not, you're going to have tremendous improvements in your health just by getting the mercury. All these adults, you know, I saw a study, adults or people who get 5 consecutive flu shots have like 10-fold risk of developing Alzheimer's. That's a relative risk of 10. That's humongous. You know, the extent of what mercury is doing, because we're only talking autism here, but I didn't have autism. You know, I was an adult. My symptoms are very similar to MS, to Lou Gehrig's, and some of these other neurological, and Parkinson's. I had almost every symptom of all 3 of those conditions combined, and all 3 of those conditions went away. All those symptoms went away when I treated it right. So, and I've talked to other people who have ALS. I've talked to one who was almost symptomology identical to mine. All he did was eat fish off. He was a fisherman off Alaska. Ate fish, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Had ALS. I can't remember if he recovered or not, but the other one who ate tuna all the time for basically, it was his favorite food, got diagnosed with ALS, talked to his mom about symptomology, told her about my experience, very similar. He was like 26. And then I never talked to them again for like maybe 3 years. I heard back from my cousin, who was my connection to them, that he followed up getting the mercury out and he no longer has ALS. So, I mean, what it's doing to the adults is totally different, and it's probably doing more the route of other neurological diseases, but everybody needs to get the mercury out of their brain because everyone's being exposed to it in the environment. Everyone's got silver fillings. Everyone's had vaccines as a child. Everyone's had some of their booster shots. Everyone, you know, eating fish. People are, the range of what this is doing to our population is it's unfathomable what the reality of it could be as far as what all it's causing. Mm-hmm.
So do you, from your vantage point and all the things you're involved in, first of all, where is your work taking you at this point? I know you're touring and you're showing the film and you're involved in some of the legal aspects of it, but where do you see yourself going with this long term? And is this a lifelong mission for you, or what is it? Where is it going?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm trying to figure out if I'm going to do another film, go back to my career. Moving forward with Go Mercury Free. It's a nonprofit, 501c3. That's really trying to spearhead a lot of the solutions. So we're doing a lot of fundraising for that right now. I've also got a 501c4 called mandatethetruth.org, which is focused really to push back on these bills. Not only push back on these bills, but also targeting the 1986 Act that takes away liability from pharmaceutical companies to try to get that somehow reinstalled. That'll be almost impossible. And it's targeting getting Bill Thompson to testify. It's kind of got some separate objectives than Go Mercury Free, specific to mercury and all the different sources, and trying to resolve that mercury exposure in many different facets. And the other thing is kind of more down the realm of corruption and trying to solve some of the corruption stuff. So I'm going down that route. I'm really, really trying to still spearhead getting the public to watch trace amounts. I mean, the general public needs to see this film to be armed with the knowledge to protect themselves and their children. It should be recommended. I mean, it should be recommended in every school so everyone has this information. And we just want the perception of mercury to finally be where it needs to be. We've had tragedy after tragedy. Minamata Bay tragedy in Japan, Iraqi grain tragedy. We had Acridinia, which is pink disease tragedy, all these different forms of mercury poisoning. But they've also always had a different name, never used the name mercury in the condition. And here we are again. We use the word autism instead of mercury. And we're going to forget all about autism 100 years down the road and expose the entire population with mercury again. And it's going to be a different form or a different route of exposure. And it's going to cause a different tragedy. It's like, when are we going to wake up and get it and finally understand how toxic this is? And no one, and anywhere, ever, anything living should be exposed to this stuff.
So in everything you're involved in, do you think we're headed in the right direction as a global population, or particularly in the United States? I mean, is there hope for these things to move forward? Or do you think that it's still a pretty much an uphill battle?
It's an uphill battle because of who we're up against. I mean, we're up against big pharma and big government. Unfortunately, the big players here who have all the liability and financial at stake are the two most powerful industries in the world. And not only big pharma and big government, CDC and FDA, but also big coal, you know, the power plants spewing mercury. We're up against pretty much every major industry with billions and trillions of dollars against a very small population of people who are trying to get the truth out and trying to stop the problem. So we have a major uphill battle against it, but we're putting a major strategy in place that we think might work, but we'll see. You know, we're putting a lot of time and effort into trying to figure out if we're censored here. There's a lot of different ways to do it nowadays with social media and other avenues that we might have a legitimate chance to do something, hopefully sooner than later. But we're strategizing right now. We're in strategy mode. We're in fundraising mode. We're in critical thinking mode, trying to figure out what the next steps are and how we can get this information out to the public.
Well, ultimately, that's where the power is, right? With enough people waking up to the truth of what's really going on. Are you seeing that happening on a broad enough scale that you think that there is some chance that will move forward at some point?
Yeah, that's a good question, because I feel the best way to topple this whole thing is if the masses, if I can just get the masses to watch the film, it's game over. Everyone who watches it, there's no way in your right mind you're going to go get a flu shot with dimerisol or trust the CDC. That's just that they know that system needs to be turned upside down. They know there's no way they're going to get a dimerisol loaded shot, flu shot, or any sort. And then our government agencies and big pharma will be forced to solve the problem, because the masses will not allow this to happen to our children. They just need the information. And unfortunately, there's so much propaganda. We're up against an unreceptive audience because of what they've been so fooled to believe. Let's put it that way. Just to get them to sit down and watch the film is a big hurdle. Once they start watching it, it's different. But get them to sit down and watch the film because of the resistance we're up against and the propaganda machine that has steered them the other direction. It's been a hurdle. It's been interesting. But there's hope. We're not stopping.
Very good. What are some of the website URLs of the film and other things that you're working on if people want to get involved?
Yeah, the film is, if you want to watch the film, it's www.traceamounts.com. That's where you can rent it, download it, buy DVDs. You can contact us. And then you can go to gomercuryfree.org. It used to be called World Mercury Project. It's now gomercuryfree.org, which is a 501c3 that's really going down the direction of trying to spearhead the solutions of all these different mercury exposures. And then www.mandatethetruth.org is a 501c4 organization, another nonprofit organization that has more ability to lobby and is really spearheading trying to get Bill Thompson to testify, get the congressional hearings going where he exposes everything to the public, and trying to target this 1986 Vaccine Act to try to get liability back into some of these pharmaceutical companies' hands, and other important objectives outside of Go Mercury Free. So we got all sorts of different things going on right now, but those are the three primary.
Well, thank you so much for all the work that you're doing out there and trying to change the consciousness of the people. And also, thank you for joining me on the show today. I appreciate the time you took to speak with me.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for trying to get the message out there, and great questions. And I appreciate all the time you take to try to help us out. Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Awaken and Power TV with my special guest, Eric Gladden. And if you'd like to watch that documentary film, I highly recommend it. You can find it at www.traceamounts.com. Join me next week for another episode of Awaken and Power TV, where we speak to another incredible individual who's standing on the leading edge and changing the world.
If you really had to make a difference on a large scale with minimal resources, how would you go about it? Have you ever dared to dream of doing that which seems impossible? On a planet steeped with corruption and destruction, the question beckons: how do we change it? Media has a far-reaching impact on people and has been used to manipulate humanity into our current destructive patterns. In order to affect people into moving into constructive patterns of behavior, we need to construct a new paradigm of media. Conscious Consumer Network has been created with the explicit intention of giving the amazing truth-seeking, solutions-orientated, alternative media a place to fully realize their true potential with a cutting-edge, high-tech professional media platform. In turn, some of the greatest freedom-seeking hearts and souls of our time have realized the true potential of what has been created and have come together to provide their insight and inspiration on CCN. Conscious Consumer Network has become a unique, interactive information and educational network which provides a free-to-view, live-stream, ultra-high-definition channel to the world and features 25 live shows a week and growing with the addition of multiple language broadcasts. CCN has features comparable with mainstream media, such as being able to pause and rewind broadcasts whilst being live streamed. Catch up on missed or previous broadcasts, now available from CCN High Definition Downloads. You can now purchase a high definition download of your favorite CCN show from epimarket.com. Support free and independent media by becoming a monthly pledger. This can be done with a monthly pledge of 10 euros, which will allow you unlimited access to CCN's high definition downloads, which hosts a back catalog of over 250 shows, which have been aired since the launch of CCN on the 1st of January 2015. In order to keep CCN on the air, public funding is needed. Please donate to CCN's Network Support Fund or become a monthly pledger. Help keep alternative media in the hands of the people. We thank you for supporting free and independent media.